Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from rainy and overcast Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a great show lined up for you today. I've got my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady herself from ProfitableStorytelling.com, joining us today. Hello, Miss Rhonda.
Hey, yeah, joining you from the Branson, Missouri area and kind of in between storms, I think, for today.
Oh, lucky you. It looks like it's going to break open any time now here in Bonita Springs.
Wow. Well, yeah, we're sunny at the moment, but we know it's coming. And I'm really excited about our guest and our show today. So she's going to be really cool. I just read the chapter in her book recently that went to number one bestseller, which is called Trust Your Heart, where she's one of the co-authors.
Oh, fantastic. I've been looking forward to having her as a guest today. So why don't you go ahead and tell our folks who our guest is?
I will absolutely do that. There we go. Just making sure my cell phone didn't go off in the middle of the show. That wouldn't be good. Okay.
And in the meantime, if we could ask her to raise her hand on the dashboard so I can figure out which one of the callers to open up the line for, it would be great. Thank you.
There we go. You got her open?
Okay. Got her open.
So
go ahead.
Our guest is an absolutely amazing copywriter. She's considered one of the hottest direct response copywriters and marketing consultants in the industry today. Her name is Michelle P.W., and that's how she likes to be introduced, and she's called your ka-ching marketing strategist. I wish I could make that little cash register noise.
I love that.
I know, ka-ching, you know, that little cash register thing would be great. So, and Michelle has a reputation for crafting copy and creating online and offline marketing campaigns that get amazing results. So Michelle started working professionally in 1992 at agencies and on staff, back when she thought she needed to have a job, and the marketing and communications and writing were her specialties. In 1998, she started her business as a freelance copywriter, and she quickly realized that her vision was bigger than serving her clients as a one-woman shop. So in 2004, she began the transformation to building a copywriting company, and that's part of what she wrote about in her chapter in Trust Your Heart. So 2 years later, her vision has turned into a reality, and her Michelle P.W. Creative Concepts and Copywriting, LLC, is a premier direct response copywriting and marketing company. And so this is cool. Today, she's catering to entrepreneurs, to small business owners internationally, including the who's who of internet marketing. And some of her clients include Allie Brown, Brian Tracy, John Astraff from The Secret, Alex Mondosian, and, of course, many others. And so she is just really amazing. She's a national speaker and author. She's completed two novels, which she and I have something in common, that we both write novels and love fiction. And she is a contributing author to the Entrepreneur Press Startup Guide to Information Marketing, as well as, of course, Trust Your Heart, Transform Your Ideas into Income. And that just went released a couple weeks ago and went to bestseller immediately. So we're very happy to welcome you, Michelle, to our show.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for asking me.
Yeah, this is really cool, and how great. There's so many things. I know you're going to help us understand some psychological triggers today and all kinds of other great things about marketing and copywriting. And congratulations on Trust Your Heart.
Yeah, that really worked out pretty well. So, I was pretty impressed with the book when I got my hands on it. And, you know, I've known Marnie for a few years anyway, so I was still honored when she asked me to be a part of it. But I knew that it'd be worth it, you know, just having known her for a while.
Yeah, Marnie is great. I'm sure she will be one of our guests soon. We're connecting soon about that. And she is terrific. She has, really great reputation and is very helpful to people. And I know she handpicked everybody who contributed to the book.
Yes, she did.
Well, great to meet you, Michelle. And to a fellow marketing strategist, I absolutely love the Ka-Ching marketing strategist. That's awesome.
Isn't that great?
Thank you.
Yes, I enjoy that too. I think we all need to hear more Ka-Ching in our lives.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You can't get too tired of that one, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure.
Why don't you get us started by giving many of our listeners are kind of new or brand new to building a business at all, on or offline. Why don't you kind of give us an overview of what they need to be thinking about?
I think where would be a good thing to start? You know, when you first start a business, there's just so much that goes on, and especially when you don't come from it as owning a business, which I didn't, and I suspect a lot of people did. I mean, I just, you know, I quit and just continued my freelance career is really what which I never really stopped. I mean, I started freelancing in college. You know, I got the freelance jobs in college, and even when I had full-time jobs, I still got, you know, freelance jobs, you know, just kept coming. So I never really stopped getting those. So I just, when I started this, I had been surrounded by other freelancers, not just freelance writers, but also camera people. That's one thing I didn't really talk about in the book. I mean, I actually started more in the television, film, video part of this. And so, like, I was doing freelance, you know, video producing and script writing and that kind of thing, as well as other pieces. So, you know, I was surrounded by freelancers. I knew what a freelance business looked like, which isn't really a business. Now, I mean, now, you know, I can say that now in the perspective of time. But at the time, I didn't know any better. And even the people that had, like, a more of an agency or boutique type, you know, where they had, like, a few camera people and that kind of thing, you know, I don't know. You know, there weren't that many just actual businesses. They all seem to be sort of like these sort of variations of freelance status, which is you kind of just create a job for yourself. I mean, it's a very familiar feeling. Yes, you've got more duties than when you work for somebody else because you have to go out and find the jobs and you have to do the billing. Unless you have people helping you out, and a lot of people don't when you first start out. But it's a familiar thing to construct. Because it's you're trading time for dollars, which is something
right.
that you do as an employer, and you have you usually have deadlines, and you're doing the same thing that you do working for an employer, you just have multiple people that you're doing it for, and you just have to balance things better. So I think the thing with me it was, you know, which I did talk about. I mean, it was sort of a long, painful process, which I'm not sorry I went through, but. Because I've got a lot of perspective now I can share, but you know I don't know if I necessarily want to wish that on anybody else. I think you need to really take a deep breath and really think about things. I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff going on, and you know, just hanging up your shingle and saying I'm in business doesn't really mean you're in business, honestly.
Right.
Because if you're just you picking up jobs from people, you know, consulting type work where you're trading dollars for hours or whatever you're doing. I mean, if you set yourself up as a as kind of a sole practitioner where you're, you know, doing it all. That's not a real business. It's kind of a hybrid. And it's a hybrid between having a job for yourself and having a business, because a real true business is something that you can actually walk away from and other people are doing the work. You know, that you know, if you need to take a sabbatical, you can. You know, it runs itself without you getting in there and doing the work. That's a true business. So, and there's nothing wrong. And so the first thing I want to say is, you know, what do you want this to look like? And so that's, and if there's nothing wrong, if you want to be a solo practitioner and you want to keep doing the work and you just don't want to work for anybody else, that is great. There's nothing wrong with that. But you have to know that's what you're doing. I created that because I didn't take a moment. I created that business because I didn't take a moment to think about what else I could create. I created because that was what was familiar to me, what I thought everybody else did. I created exactly what I saw. And what I'm here to tell you, as somebody who came from that and has created something different now, it doesn't have to be that way. Now, you can try it. You know, certainly you can try it. You can decide, you know, you might think this is what you want. You create it, you don't like it. That's a different scenario. But before you even go down that path, make sure that this is what you want, because the problem is that once you actually build something that you realize that you don't really want, it's not so bad if you did it because you didn't, because this is what you thought you wanted and it turned out it wasn't, that's just the way things go. But if you create it simply because you don't realize there's another way to do it and it isn't really what you want, it's really bad, because what's going to happen is you're going to get trapped, and it's going to be very hard to extricate yourself, because, you know, once you actually have a freelance solo practitioner type business where you're trading hours for dollars and you've got clients and you're doing your work yourself, it's much harder at that point to turn your business into an actual business than it is if you just simply create it correctly from the beginning. So that's why I want you all to think about it. You know, do you want a solo practitioner business? And so let's look at the pros and cons of each. Now, if it's just you, a one man shop, one woman shop, doing the work, one good thing about this is that you're doing what you love, so that's great. But the downside is, and it's also very simple. So I guess that's the other thing too. We need to think about, you know, if it's just you, and maybe you have somebody that does your books. You know, maybe you've got a little bit of help, but it's basically just you doing the work. Your life is a simpler life, but it's simpler in a different way, I guess I should say, because you still have to be thinking about. You still have to be kind of balancing all the different roles, and that may not be simple. But in terms of having to deal with other personalities, other people, finding people, getting them in, you know, the complexity changes when you grow, when you have a different business. I mean, you have a simpler life if it's just sort of you and the work. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's more desirable, because you still have to be thinking about a lot of different things. Like, you know, when the work dries out, and you don't want to create a feast or famine business. And if you do create a feast or famine business, that creates a whole other problem. But the problem with that is that the biggest drawback of a one-person shop is that your reach is small. There's just no way you're going to be able to reach the number of people that you want to reach. And if that's not what you want to do, though, if you don't want to reach a lot of people, then and you're fine just making your small little impact in the world because, you know, you love what you're doing, then do it. Embrace it. Love it. If this is not what you want, if you have a bigger reach, if you know that you've got a message that you need to change the world, if you know that you're supposed to be big, then you need to think about setting up your business differently. And don't just set this up, you know, right now as a freelancer because you think that that's, you know, well, I'll change it later. I mean, you can change it later, but like I said, it's a lot harder. You can always take on, you know, one-on-one consulting jobs for income as you grow it, but set it up correctly from the beginning. But before you do anything, figure out what you want. and see what you really think you need to be doing, and then do it accordingly.
So, one of the things that jumps out to me, Michelle, and the things that you're saying is that to me, if you're going to be like a practitioner or a technician, photographer, writer, editor, you know, whatever, who has a particular skill, you can always end up in the loop of trading time for dollars. And it can be
right.
very hard to get ahead unless you have some kind of a multiple streams approach even with that. And it's something I see. There's somebody that, Gina, you know, I'm sure who I'm talking about, that we're both dealing with, who seems to be caught in kind of a practitioner trap where the things that she's saying that she wants to play bigger, but yet the things that are happening are keeping her in this sort of practitioner trading time for money kind of a world, and that may not be really what's going to get her to her goals.
Yeah, and it's you know, and that's a problem, and it's a real dance. It took me a couple years to kind of fully just get my head around. I mean, first off, the first place, if she's listening or if you want to tell her, first thing I would work on is her mindset. Because I mean really work on her mindset. Because I suspect what's going on is she's not ready to let go. And I've gone there too. And so this is nothing. But you know, once you're ready to let go, you can take things around. Things will change, but if you're not ready, it won't change. And it doesn't matter how much on the surface she says, yes, 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 this is what I want, this is what I want, this is what I want. She's got to pull down deeply and really think about it. And I've been challenged quite a bit. In fact, I've just been recently challenged, you know, taking another big level with my business and really letting go on a deeper level. And, you know, and this has been something that I've been struggling with. You know, I've already let go a lot, but I realized if I had to take another big final step, I had to let go even more. And this has been something that I've struggled with for 6 months. And you need somebody. In my case, I'm lucky because my husband is in the business. He's actually the COO, and he runs the, you know, he manages and he runs the operations. And he's not a writer, which is a good thing. I think that having somebody who manages your business that doesn't actually do the work is very freeing and can really add a whole level of objectivity that you don't have, because you are, you know, you get lost in your identity being the practitioner, and this is an issue. So, but he's been reminding me for months that if I want my business to stay where it is. And there's nothing wrong with where it is, that there'd be a lot of people out there that probably would want what I have, but I've got bigger dreams. And he keeps saying, well, if you want what you have, you know, then you're then it's fine. But if you do, you have to change. So, and he's really challenged me on that.
Reminds me of a quote that that every new level of success demands a new level of you, and that's really what you're talking about here.
Yeah, it really is, and it's really. It's very scary, because what finally got me through the breakthrough is I kind of got through the layers down, and I realized that part of my identity of how I sold things was wrapped up in it, and I hadn't really figured that out. And so once I realized there could be a new way of selling that, but I didn't know any other way because I had sold it for one way forever. So that's, and I didn't even realize I was doing it. That's the problem with stories, is that they get so embedded into your subconscious, into your mindset, and I feel for this person, because I suspect she's got some huge blind spot just staring at her in the face, and it's such an embedded story. She doesn't even realize it's a story, and that's the problem with these things. They've got like, you know, tentacles. They like wrap themselves around you. You don't even realize that it's like this alien life force or something.
It's a life of its own.
It does, and you know, and it's very, very hard to. Once it's taken hold like that, it's very, very hard to extricate yourself. But you have to. I mean, if you want to move, if you really, truly want to move, you have to do it. And that's just the only way. And there's no, unfortunately, there's no easy answer. I wish there was.
Yeah, oh, that's for sure. And I love in your chapter in Trust Your Heart that you were talking about how even when you are trusting your heart and even when you are following your passion, don't expect the road to be easy. And I think that's a really important message. A lot of people just feel like if you find your passion and you trust, then everything's just going to open up to you like a flower and go, here it is. And that's just not the way it happens a lot of the time.
No, it really doesn't. And that's one of the fallacies. I mean, things will. There are, you know, you do get,
yeah.
It's not completely black. I mean, you get good signs. So, but yes, I wanted to focus on the bad because I think that that's what derails people. In fact, I've seen it happen where entrepreneurs, they take this big leap and they take the step forward and then everything collapses on them. And then they immediately shrink and they go back to their comfort zone. Yeah, and they say, oh, you know, obviously I was in the right time, the universe, I mean, you know, the stories. And it's like, no, it's not what happened, but they weren't, you know, it may have been they weren't ready, there wasn't a mindset gap. I don't know what's going on. I mean, everybody's different. But, you know, but that happens more often than people talk about. So you need to be prepared that sometimes things don't always look the way you think they're going to look.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of it is kind of the hero's journey cycle, that the minute you say yes to the adventure and you start off on the quest, that immediately sets into place a road of some difficulties, which actually are meant to bring you into being the best version of you possible. But, of course, if you then go, oh, well, since I made this big yes, okay, I'll do it, and then everything fell apart, that must be a sign from God that I'm not supposed to. And
right.
So then they can give up too soon.
Yeah, you know, think about it. Like Luke Skywalker, I mean, Star Wars is the perfect hero's journey. Yeah, and so watch that again if you want to really see that. But yeah, I mean, think about what would happen if, you know, he they had the droids in the little car or at the bar or something, and they just kind of said, oh, you know, this happened, forget it, I'm not getting on the ship. It was a really short movie, so you know, any time he could have just said, oh, this is a sign, and I must not you know have to do this. It's too hard. I can't get Han Solo to, you know, take a ship, you know, whatever. And, you know, he could have viewed any of those as this thing. And you know, instead he persevered.
Yeah, that's really powerful. So, Gina, before we get started, and Michelle's really great with understanding psychological triggers, and I'm excited for her to share that. But before we do, what are some things that you would like to highlight or to know from Michelle?
So I'd really like to get into the discussion of copy and psychology and that kind of thing, because that's something that I know so many of our listeners really do struggle with. When they sit down to write a sales letter, it comes out as a piece of hypey garbage, and it doesn't need to be that way. And just looking at your website, it starts with attention entrepreneurs and small business owners who are tired of hype and want results. What a great way to start the website. So why don't we just jump right in?
Okay. So, well, first let me talk about what copywriting is, because that's a good place to start. And copywriting is not it's not like protecting your intellectual property. It's nothing to do with like you know copywriting your book or protecting, you know, so that nobody steals your intellectual property. That's spelled C-O-P-Y-R-I-G-H-T. It's a government thing. It's a legal thing. Nothing to do with me. I didn't go to law school. So what I do is called copywriting. It's spelled differently, C-O-P-Y-W-R-I-T-I-N-G. And it's writing promotional materials for businesses, okay? But that's actually very broad. There's a lot of different copywriting out there, a lot, and that's for the reason why there's this whole kind of like subset of freelancers, because there's an awful lot of things that businesses need written, and they don't necessarily want to hire somebody full-time writer to do it, so they end up hiring a lot of freelancers, and I think this actually works out better for most people. I mean, it's good to have good to have full-time writers, but it's also good to have these kind of freelancers that you can depend on. So I think writers as a whole, I think almost work better as long as they can get their workflow steady. I think they like having multiple clients, so I think it's a win-win for everybody. But
I agree wholeheartedly with that. By the way.
Oh yeah.
I have done a lot of that different writing, but that's not what my company specializes in. My company specializes in something called direct response. Now, what's direct response? Well, it's with when you, the marketing, the promotion materials are getting your ideal clients to directly respond to them. So direct mail is a good is where this whole thing started, actually. You know, where you've got, like, call this number and give your credit card. Infomercials, you know, call this number, you know, get out your credit card and we'll ship you this product. That's direct response. You know, go here and get your special report. Fill in this thing, get your special report, whatever it is. And then, of course, the Internet. The Internet is really based on, selling on the Internet has really turned into a direct response in a lot of ways. That's what those squeeze pages are. Squeeze pages are those pages that they're shorter and they're usually asking for your name and email address. That's and nothing else. And in exchange, you get sign up for a call, sign up for a webinar, be able to, you know, get a special report. That's direct response. Those long sales letters that you're scrolling down forever looking for the price, that's direct response. Emails that you get in your inbox where they say, click on something, that's direct response, because it's evoking you to take action. So why direct response? Well, because direct response makes a lot of sense. There's kind of two ways to build customers. There is direct response, and then there's also called brand, top of the mind awareness or branding. And when you're familiar with those are like McDonald's television commercials, you know, Charmin television commercials, you know, Tide television commercials or whatever. Those are, they're just brand awareness. You know, when you're watching commercials on TV, they're not telling you to do anything. They're not telling you, you know, drop everything, go to the store and buy, you know, Charmin. They're just talking about the product, and they're just, what they're doing is they're trying to get a they're trying to have top of the mind awareness. So when you're in the grocery store trying to decide which toilet paper to buy, you buy Charmin because they've done so much time and energy and spent so much money running ad after ad after ad. Well,
I call that self-awareness.
Yeah, brand awareness. So it works. No question it works. In some ways, it's almost, in some respects, it's an easier approach because you just got to really throw a lot of money at it. But that's exactly the problem, is that you have to throw a lot of money at it. And it's especially difficult to do that now because now we've got the Internet, we've got 5 million cable channels, we've got all these different newspapers and magazines, and everything is vying for our attention. So it was a lot easier to do this when there was 3 television stations. You know, we didn't even have Fox and, you know, like your local newspaper and a couple of national magazines, and that was really the extent of it. Not so easy to do now. So most people don't have the kind of money that would take to really do that. So the way you do it, when you don't have a lot of money, or you don't want to spend that kind of money, if it's a choice, is through direct response. And that's because what you're doing is you're using the copy, using words to get people to take action, and to also build a relationship, and to to market to them. So you're using the word. You're using, and really, that when you dig down beyond the words, what it really is coming is about is a psychological trigger. It's the same as sales. You may have heard that copy is salesmanship in print, and that's because there is a lot of similarities between what salespeople do in terms of building relationship, building rapport, having a conversation, getting to the heart of what their problems are, and then presenting a solution. A lot of that is done with direct response copy and direct response marketing. So the best part of doing this is you can build a business without spending gobs of money. You can leverage your marketing and your selling. So even if you are, you know, if what you want to be is a solo person, a solo practitioner, that is the business you want to build, if you can master these copy and marketing techniques, you can basically, you can leverage your marketing and sales to the point where, I'm not going to say you don't have to do anything with it, because you do have to do some stuff with it, but it takes a lot of the onus off of you. I mean, you really can use the techniques and this, and these whole triggers to really just kind of get a full pipeline and manage things, and then you're really just focusing on delivering, you know, doing what you're, you know, doing your brilliance, delivering what you promised, and you are less stressed about trying to find that next lead. So so-and-so or next client or next whatever. So this is really the way to leverage your marketing and selling so you spend a lot less time marketing and selling and a lot more time doing other things that you want to do. Most people I know who are not in marketing don't love it or sales. So this is a way that you can really free yourself up. So that's kind of the heart of where we're going. And the psychological triggers really are, a lot of them mirror what we were as cavemen. I mean, this is, you know, we haven't really changed a lot psychologically since we were living in caves and getting chased by saber-toothed tigers. So really, the more we can take what we're doing and bring it down to a level to one of those main triggers that we're using and how we understand it, the more likely it is that we are going to be able to create copy that is authentic, that does not sound salesy or hypey. It feels good for you, feels good for your ideal client, and it gets you results.
So let me just back up for a second, because one of the things that I really heard you say there is, although we're talking about copywriting with W-R-I-T-I-N-G, it's not just the written word. It can even be the spoken word, such as in the infomercials that you referred to. Whether we're talking about copy speak or copywriting, the principles of direct response don't change, is what I heard you say.
That is exactly it. In fact, studying infomercials is a really good way to learn it. Just put your wallet away, because you may end up
with
something you don't want.
Yeah, and something that I love to do is watch the infomercials, call in to make a purchase, and study what they do in that process, as well as what was done on the infomercial. Only buy the first thing. But a couple years ago, I had bought a toy for my dog, Fritz, and it was an indestructible dog toy. And I really bought it because I wanted to see what happened after that. I called in to order this $10 dog toy and got presented with 13 separate offers.
Wow.
And the way that they did that and what was offered just blew my mind how much they really knew about their ideal prospect and ideal customers. Because clearly they knew their audience really well to realize that having jewelry offered after buying a dog toy was really going to be targeting women and not men. It was very obvious.
Right.
So it is a great way to understand copy, period.
And that's really what a lot of this is. I mean, you know, this whole, if you study, and this is probably a little bit beyond this, but if you study the kind of the whole cycle of direct response, it started with print, because it started kind of at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
And then what happened was is that a lot of these people, you know, when television came around, see, you know, they take the direct response because the principles still work. You know, that's the thing. They work no matter what. So then they took it and they adapted it to television. So now that, and then when the internet came about, you know, then they adapted it to internet. So it's really the same principles. It's just adapted to the different formats and the different technologies. Mm-hmm.
And as virtual
right.
reality has come about with things like Second Life, they've taken what they've made work on print and TV and internet, and they've started applying it in virtual worlds online as well. So
exactly.
we'll see more evolutions as we move forward. Even cell phones and mobile, we're now taking what we know about copy and direct response and applying it in yet a different type of media.
Online games, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, online games, too, absolutely. Or I was watching a TV show on the History Channel last night. I don't know if you've seen Pawn Stars, the guys that have the pawn shop in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Well, they've recently become the number one most often show on any channel, like cable, satellite, whatever. Yeah. And my husband was watching and noticed that they have this game that you can go and play on Facebook. And he went, oh, I bet their game is hot because of the TV show. And quite frankly, I went and studied it because I was intrigued by it. There's a game that's been played online for years called the Lemonade Stand game that can teach people how to be an entrepreneur by running their own lemonade stand. Well, it's a very similar type of thing with this Pawn Stars game. but they debuted that game on Facebook. And it's not that the game became popular because of the TV show. It's actually the game made the TV show hit number one because people liked going into Facebook and becoming an entrepreneur of their own, running their own pawn shop. They then want to watch the show. So one media can lead into another media because of the way that direct response marketing is used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know, Facebook and games and Facebook are big anyway. So, yes, that's a really interesting point, yeah.
And, you know, it really is just direct response. They're telling you on the TV show to go play the game. On the game, they're telling you to go watch the TV show. And the more people they get doing either one, the more the ad dollars come rolling in from the sponsors and the advertising that's being sold in both places. And
exactly.
That's where the money is.
Yep.
It's not about the people watching the show. It's really about getting the numbers up to get the money from the advertisers more than anything else. So one of the things that I see people do with direct response is they don't necessarily plan out the money necessarily. They think that what they're doing right then, writing a sales letter or doing a video, is the thing that brings the money in. How does the money play into copywriting?
I don't know if I understand. Wait, I mean, because it all has to come down to money.
So my students, for example, my students would be putting out their very first ebook, and they're looking at the dollars they're going to bring in from the ebook. But it's not the dollars that they're going to bring in from the ebook that's going to really build their business. That's just a product. They've got to have a series of copywriting pieces that really focus around where the money's really going to come from.
Yes. Okay. So it's, you know, that's a kind of So first they need the funnel, which is probably a separate conversation. And so once they've got that taken care of, then using the copy. So knowing how everything feeds into it, and the biggest thing is, and this is making sure you know what the next question is, or the next step for people, and then presenting that to people. This is actually one of the triggers too. It's a later trigger, but we'll jump ahead. Because people forget to do this. If you don't tell people what they should do, what the next step is, they won't do anything at all. So, and it doesn't matter how much you think. Well, you know, they're, of course it's you know, people want me to buy. You know, I'm in business. So, you know, don't people automatically assume that, you know, that the next step is to purchase something? Well,
No, they don't.
I mean, nope. I suppose, you know, on a global level, they understand that you need to sell things to stay in business. I mean, of course we understand that, but they're not. But nobody is thinking about your specific situation. Nobody is thinking about, okay, you need to have the sale because, you know, you've got to pay your mortgage or whatever is going on. You know, they don't really care what's going on in for you. I mean, they do, but they don't. What they really want to know is, you know, are they spending their money wisely? Because they've got to answer to their own money as well. And so are you going to actually, you know, is it going to actually solve their problem that they have? Is this a good use of their money? Is this worth their investment? And so that, you know, that's the thing is that you have to know that what they're coming from, but you also realize that they're not, it doesn't matter what you think is obvious, what's not obvious. If you don't actually tell people what you want them to do next, they probably will just go do something else because it won't be clear to them what's going on. I mean, think of those infomercials. You know, what are those infomercials? They'll say, you know, call now, or they'll say pick up the phone and call now. They actually go as far as to tell you to pick up the phone. And you would say, well, you know, obviously if you've got, like, call now, you've got the phone number blinking, you have to pick up the phone to call. But they found that the more they spell it out and actually walk people through what the next step is, the more likely it is they're actually going to take that next step. And so, like what you just said about getting presented different offers. So this is not just about, okay, pick up the phone and call now, and here's the one step. It's like you have to think about it throughout the whole thing, you know. So okay, now that they bought, Now what's the next step? Now where do you want them to go from there? I mean, are you just going to give them the product and say, see ya? I mean, you could, but then you don't really, but that, again, that's not really, you're leaving a lot of money on the table, because once somebody buys something from you, it's a lot easier to get them to buy something else than to go out and find a new customer. I mean, that's been proven time and time again. So what's the next step for people? Where is the next step that they should go? And if they have a good experience with your first product, they're probably going to want to buy a second product from you. And if you don't give them that, they'll go somewhere else. So this is all the kind of stuff that you need, you need to get clear in your head what you want them to do. So I think that's, this all starts with you. Notice the trend.
Right.
And once you know what you want them to do, then you can tell them what you want them to do. And you don't have to do this in like a bossy, obnoxious way. You're just sharing. Because the reality is that most people, you're actually doing them a disservice if you don't make them an offer and if you don't tell them where they want to go next. Because they may be thinking this is, they want the next step. And if you don't give them the next step, then you've just done a disservice, because now they're feeling lost, and or they've got another problem that they think that you can fix them, and you're not providing that for them.
Yeah, exactly. And so often with people just starting out, I hear, well, I don't want them to feel sold to, so I'll just have a piece of copy that sells my ebook and then doesn't have something that is being sold beyond that.
Or they don't even sell their ebook very well. Like, they forget to actually put something
exactly.
on there, like, buy now or add the cart, because they don't want to be
blame it
pushy.
Out, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
you're not being pushy. You're simply stating if and think of it this way. You've presented the solution. When you get at the end of the day, this is what it is. Your ebook that you've written is a solution to a problem that your ideal clients have. And so you've presented to them.
Or at least
now
it should
you,
be.
Yeah, and so now it's up to them to make the decision. You're not twisting their arm. You don't have a gun to their head. You're not grabbing money out of their wallet. You've presented the solution. So now you close the deal. Ask them, say here it is, and they can always say
right.
no. But if you don't present it to them, then you're not giving them that option to say no. So.
Well, and one of the things that I like to say, because I think it really makes a lot of sense to people, is if your ebook really is the solution to the pain and the problem that they have, by not really telling them to go and buy it, you're actually doing them a disservice.
Yes.
And you really, if you're there to serve and you don't want to be there selling them, you've got to sell them the ebook or you're not serving them well.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. What I like. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. The example that I like to use with people is, so imagine if your perfect customer has just cut themselves and you have Neosporin and Band-Aids and you're telling them how great Neosporin and Band-Aids are, but you don't hand it to them or tell them how to get it. Well, they're still in pain. And you wouldn't want to leave people that way.
So the reality is there's nothing wrong with having a business. So I think this is, a lot of times, this gets back to being hung up on money, asking for money, yada, 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 yada. So take a good hard look at that. If you're not comfortable asking people for money, there's no shame, there's no issues, there's no problem with having a business. Because the reality is that having a business is probably the easiest way for you to get your message out in the world. It's not easy to get your message out in the world if you don't have a business around it. That's a very difficult way to do that, because money is the engine that's going to help you get your business, your message out in the world. If you aren't bringing money in to fund this, then how on earth are you going to do any good? So there's nothing wrong with it, and there's nothing to be ashamed of, and there's no problem with it. And unless you come from a lot of money and you could just start a foundation, you're independently wealthy, but even then, the money came from somewhere. So, that's what needs to happen. And you just kind of going out and doing it on your own with no money to drive it is going to be a very, very hard and difficult road. Not that owning a business isn't hard at times, but it's a lot harder doing it that way. So, yeah, so that's one of them. And then, I don't know, I can go through, another trigger is to think about is, first off, I want you to be really clear who you're selling to. So this is actually the first one. But it's deeper than just like a target market or a niche market. I mean, I like to call it your ideal client. And so when you're writing this ebook, this is great that you talked about an ebook because you may find that who you think you're writing it for is not actually your true ideal client. I've got this story that I know where somebody wrote a book and he thought it was a self-development book and he tried to sell it to the self-development crowd and they didn't want it. They didn't buy it. And he sold one copy and then he raised the price and he sold two copies. But, and he was speaking in front of big groups of people. Well, he switched to a different ideal client group. He actually switched to the internet marketing crowd and he turned it into a six-figure empire. So, and he raised the price too, by the way. So he ended up being $97 as an ebook versus, $18 as a hard physical product. So it was a hell of a lot more profit in what he ended up with.
Oh, and yeah,
a lot more of them. And it was an easier sell. It wasn't an uphill sell because the internet crowd or the self development crowd didn't want it, but the internet marketing crowd did. So, don't get so, think about who your favorite clients are and why. Really kind of figure out what you want to do, what the solution is, but don't get married to who you think that you're going to sell to. I'm going to sell to this niche because the reality is that might not be the niche that wants it. There's no question that they probably need it. But just because they need it doesn't mean they will buy it. They will only buy – people only buy what they want, and they don't buy what they need. Now, they will justify their purchases by saying they need it, but the reality is that they don't need it. They want it. That's why they're buying it. I mean, there are really very few things that we need on a survival level to survive. We need some form of shelter, some form of food, which can be ramen noodles, and some form of clothes and maybe transportation, but we can walk, and that's really about it. We don't need, water and air. That's what we need to survive. What we want is obviously something much better than a bare existence,
right,
subsiding on ramen noodles all the time. So that's hence where the buying decisions come in. We're trying to decide what we want, and then, of course, we justify the purchase by saying that we need it. So you do play into need, and you can say about need, but you need to find the market, your ideal clients. Your ideal clients want what you're selling, okay? They want it. If you have to completely twist their arm and show them all the stuff and they're still not buying, they don't want it. You're in the wrong ideal client group. You need to find you can still try to keep forcing it down their throat if you really want to, or you can find someone else that wants it. And when they want it, you change the world there too.
That's a really good one.
That's a really good one and a really important distinction for people to get. We always talk about giving people what they want first. And as a business owner, you may know where you think they need to go, but that's not necessarily at all what they want or what's on their mind.
Yes. And at the end of the day, there is an old saying, and this happens, what you give them what you want, and you sell them what you want, and you give them what they need. And because, what they want at the end of the day is a solution to their problem. But the solution to their problem, how you get about that solution may look differently. And so if you try to sell them the solution, this happens a lot with coaching, whereas, people want one thing, and then when you actually delve down, it's like, because I get this a lot when I work with coaches. The coaches will say, well, they come to me for this reason, but But really what the problem is over here, and when we fix that problem, the initial problem that they came to me goes away. You know, I bet this happens to a lot of you out there. So the answer to that is, of course, you sell them what they want. You sell them the answer to the problem, their initial problem, what they're coming for you for. Because if you try to sell them this other thing, they may not realize they don't realize there's a connection. And so for you to try to educate them in the selling process is way too complicated and convoluted. The best way is to sell them, talk to them where they're at, and then get them into the program, and then give them what they need. You know, fix the problem, and you're going to fix it the way that you know that's going to get fixed, and you're going to end up fixing a whole bunch of problems, and some of them they didn't even know they had. But you are fixing the original problem that came to you first, so it's not a bait and switch. You're just simply talking to them where they're at without trying to complicate things or complicate what's going on.
It's amazing how fast we're running out of time. So a couple of things. I want to make sure to remind people of your website so they can find you, which is at michellepw.com, and that's michellepw.com. Excuse me.
Oh, and I do have a free gift for everybody,
yes.
And this has to do, it's got more about copywriting. In fact, it's got a couple audios on there, including another version of it. I do this talk, the 5 psychological triggers, and it's different every time I do it. This is when we got into a lot of other things. So it's certainly worth listening to, but it's michellepw.com/free-gift. And, please sign up. And there's actually 2 audios and a white paper all about this and more. So michellepw.com/free-gift.
That'll be great.
Thank you for
not
that.
Not everything we covered on the show is different.
So you'll get more tips.
right.
Well, and this is a topic that we could literally do for weeks on end and not run out of stuff to say about it. It is
such
a fascinating topic, and it is one of the topics that literally can totally turn your business around. So you can't really hear enough about it, in my opinion. It will have a very big impact on your business if you really apply some of what you've shared today, Michelle. Thank you so much for all of it.
You're welcome, and it really can. The biggest thing is just to get your own head around it, and marketing and sales is not easy. So I'm just going to, first off, you probably don't love it, so that right there is a problem. And the second piece of this is that marketing and sales is really wrapped up with a lot of other things, like money, any issues you have around money, any issues you have around your value, any issues you have around getting big in the world, anything you've got about being known, being visible, all of these things can be traced back to marketing and sales. Because what is marketing and sales? Marketing and sales is all of that. It'll grow your business. It'll grow your visibility. It can make you, it can grow your credibility. You ask for money and you get it. This is all about your value. And if you've got anything, any problems with any of those, what usually happens is you sabotage your marketing and your sales. So just know that. And be okay. We all do it. And but look for the root cause and work on your marketing and sales. Because the reality is, if you work on marketing and sales, that's how you're going to realize where these things are coming up.
Well, and you can have the best product in the world, and if no one's buying it, it's not making any difference for anybody.
Nope.
So if you really are out there not because you want to sell people to death and not because you want to make millions, but because you want to make a difference, you've got to find a way to work on this stuff, or you're not going to be able to make a very big difference at all.
Nope, you aren't.
So, Rhonda, we've got 90 seconds left. What else would you like Michelle to share in those 90 seconds? Well, I'm not sure where Rhonda just went. That's interesting.
That's okay. We can finish it up.
There you go. So what happened?
Here I am. I'm here.
You're so funny.
Sunspots.
So one last thing would you like Michelle to wrap up with today, Rhonda?
Well, not knowing what I missed in the last year, I can't have business. But I'm just really just want to thank you, and I'm excited that you were here. And I think it's important to understand the psychological triggers, and that it's not that you're trying to trick people, but you're wanting to understand what makes people tick so that you can get them the solutions that they want. So done properly, it can be very ethical and absolutely above board, and that's something I want people to understand, because I know some folks go, oh, I don't want to trick people into buying, and that's not what triggers are about at all.
No. Yeah, well,
and if you just take a look at Michelle PW's site, it's very, very obvious. She's not out there tricking anybody.
No.
And Michelle, what last thoughts would you like to leave our listeners with today?
You know, that's probably a big thing. I mean, this is not about tricking. This is about because the reality is you don't make a good case. There's a lot of things out there that's vying for people's money and time. So if you do not make a good case why they should be spending money and time on what you're selling, you're not going to be in business very long. And that's really what these things really are coming down to. You're making a case. That's what this is about. It has nothing to do, because you're not tricking. The reality is when you trick people, that's when you get big refund rates. So I'm never about tricking people. And you know, not only that, I mean, there's a lot of other negative stuff that comes in. So this is just about providing, you know, giving them the tools that they need so that they can make a decision on whether or not they want to move forward with you. That's really all this is. You're giving them tools and a way that they can make a decision, a proper decision, not just, well, you know, not just something off the cuff, you know, that they can actually really think about it and weigh the pros and cons and decide for themselves if your product, program, service, ebook, whatever it is that you're selling, is going to is going to solve their problems. Because the reality is that actually the sale is just the first piece of it. They still have to read your ebook. So if you don't make a compelling case for your ebook being worth it, they're not going to read it. So, and then they're still not going to get the solution they need. So part of what the selling process is also selling them to read it.
Well, thank you again for being here today, Michelle. It's been our pleasure. And Rhonda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. In the meantime, visit Michelle PW at michellepw.com. Have a great week, everybody, and see you next week.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University, www.directionsu.com, for passion-powered results.